The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
Frank Lissay joins me. He served in Wisconsin as a state senator, also served in Governor Scott Walker's administration, and he works a lot on energy and environmental issues. He's also author of a brand new book here, Climate and Energy Lies, Expensive, Dangerous, and Destructive. Boy, we could use more of you here in the state of Oregon because, first off, welcome to the show, Frank. It's good to have you on. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. These are really important topics, as you know, and Oregon's right in the middle of the bleeding edge of all of this kind of craziness, because once you start to understand the facts of it all, you will understand that adding wind and solar to our electric grids is just going to add more costs. It's just going to drive our electric rates literally through the roof.
It's already starting here in Oregon, and we're looking at 17% hikes. And I know some are saying, well, it's just inflation. Here's the challenge, and I've been trying to explain this for years, and I imagine you would concur with me, that the problem with intermittent renewable power is that you have to build the power system twice. You have to build the windmills or the solar or whatever renewable energy you're going to have. And then you have to have the instantly available backup source when it goes down. I mean, isn't that really what we're looking at here in Oregon and elsewhere?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the way I try to help regular people get their head around these big, complex topics is your family, you have several gas cars, and then the government and some charlatans come to you and say, you know, if you bought a solar car that only works when the sun shines, like solar panels, you could save a lot of money because you don't have to put any gas into it. The government will give you 30% to buy it, and they'll give you a 30% rebate for every mile you drive on it. You go, ooh, this is great. So you buy that solar car, and then you find out, you know, the sun doesn't – well, you got a lot of cloudy days and rainy days in Washington, so you can't really drive it when it's – or Oregon, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
When it's really cloudy because you don't have much solar energy then, and you don't get much solar the first hour and last hour of the day. So you discover you can't really even take it to work. You can't use it when it's dark, when it's raining. And you go, well, I can't replace one of my gas cars because I need that because it's reliable and full time. So now your car cost just went up because you're paying for an extra part-time car. Then the same thing happens with the wind. They say, well, use your wind car, and it only works when the wind's blowing, just like wind turbines, which is only about 30% of the time. So they only work about one-third of the time. So you buy a wind car and get the same deal, 30% to buy it, 30% for every mile you use it. And then you find out you can't even take it to the kid's soccer game because the wind stops blowing halfway through the game. And then to make the analogy further, you need to keep your gas cars idling all the time because you have to jump in one of them to go rescue the people who are driving the part-time cars that get stranded someplace. And that's what we have to do with our electric grids. We have to have the natural gas and the coal running all the time, even if they're not putting electricity on the grid. Because the reason you have to burn gas is you have to have steam to turn giant turbines to make electricity. So now you're burning gas all the time, idling your car. Granted, it's not like driving it, but you're still using fuel. The natural gas is still using fuel when they're idling their plants, ready to step in anytime the wind stops or the sun stops shining, which is often. And if you looked at Germany, for instance, they just went through a period of a few days where wind produced almost nothing. And solar, it was cloudy there, so solar produced almost nothing. So they had to, use all their other resources. So you're paying for all your resources, and then you're also paying for the part-time as well. So it's only going to add cost. And then on top of it, transmission wires are wildly expensive. They're estimating to build the literally thousands upon thousands of miles of transmission wires to move that wind and solar from where it's being generated to the cities where you need it is going to cost, in some estimates, $3 to $5 trillion.
And you see, and that doesn't get talked about. That doesn't get talked about nearly enough, Frank. Frank Lissay, once again, he's the author of Climate and Energy Lies, Expensive, Dangerous, and Destruction. Not only does energy have to be available on demand, but it also has to be affordable. And that affordable aspect of things tends to be getting lost a lot recently. Let me bring up what is a very common approach from gangrene here in Southern Oregon. Well, we'll take care of the intermittent and chaotic side of renewable energy, Frank. All we need are big, big batteries everywhere to take the excess energy that's in there when it's blowing or the sun is shining, et cetera, and then we'll be able to have it for you when it's dark or when the clouds happen or when the wind stops blowing. What do you say to that?
That's just a talking point. It's a talking point that's wildly expensive. That $3 to $5 trillion we need to build those transmission wires is dwarfed by what it would cost to build batteries. And the battery technology just really isn't there. So like Southern California, in the winter, they have almost 2 million rooftop solar installations in California. They're required in all new homes, so they're adding $20,000 to every new home there. And in the winter, when it's sunny and mild and they aren't using air conditioning, they produce too much electricity. There's no way to fill batteries in January in California and then save it to June, because when it dissipates over that time, they lose their power, just like batteries at your house. It's too long. And then the other part of it is once you discharge a battery, this is the part they forget about all of that. Once you discharge a battery, it has to be filled again. So you have to have electricity, that wind and solar they're talking about is going to run everything. You got to have enough of that to meet your current needs. And remember, it's part-time. So how does that work? And then you have to fill the battery. So you have to have excess power, fill your present needs, have excess power, fill the batteries before you need the batteries again.
Well, it's almost as if the plan is to, we're just going to build way, way, way overbuild wind and solar, just put it on absolutely everything, and if we have enough intermittent and chaotic, then there will be enough to keep us through the time when it's intermittent and chaotic. And it doesn't quite make sense.
It doesn't make
right?
sense. Okay. No, it doesn't make sense. And that's what they're telling us they can do. And then the worst part of this is, there's actually several worst parts of this. So one worst part is by doing that, at every 20 to 25 years, you're going to have to rebuild everything. Rebuild all your wind and solar. It's going to cost you a fortune. Natural gas, coal, and nuclear power plants last 50 to 75 years and are in small footprints. So that's one major huge difference and a huge drawback. So you have to rebuild all of them. It's very expensive. Then the other bad part is you know, again, that 30% subsidy to build and 30% of the energy it generates.
Well, what do you do when you have to decommission all those solar cells and those windmills? Where do you put them?
Well, then you know, the EPA says that solar panels are hazardous waste.
Oh.
So you have to dispose of those. You have to spend about $500,000 to $1 million taking down each wind turbine as well. And then you can't use the same base, so you have to pour new concrete to build another base for a 70-story structure. And make all that steel all over again, because it weakens, because it's in the air, it weakens over time. That's why you have to replace it. They replace the blades about every 12 years. So halfway through their 20 to 25 year lifespan, you replace all the blades. So that's another expense that goes on. And then you have to dispose of them, and you can't recycle the blades. You could recycle the steel, I suppose.
Yeah.
But you can't recycle very well the solar panels. It costs literally 5 times more to recycle solar panels than it does to just dispose of them, and then they're waste forever, and they're cutting up and burying those wind turbines.
Frank, wouldn't it be more honest if you're going to sell windmills and solar power panels technology and the solar farms to the people? If you're going to sell that technology to the people, wouldn't it be more honest and actually more responsible, if you're going to do it, to include the full cost? And when I say the full cost of what it would take to decommission every one of those turbines that they're putting up everywhere, and in the solar farms, these industrial sized solar cells, that all the costs have to be built into it. So in other words, if you have that, if you're going to build these, great, you have to have a bond or some form of financial responsibility to make sure that taxpayers aren't on the hook for when it all wears out. How about that?
Absolutely. That is 100% accurate. And the cost of those transmission wires to move the electricity should also be built into the cost of the wind and solar. And all of that's going to be added to our electric bills, folks. And they're going to just skyrocket. 17%, you're going to see it every single year or more as they continue this kind of crazy path. And all we have to do is look to Germany. And I think this is part of the underlying real reason they're doing this, is to make electricity really expensive, which really harms our economy, because everything goes up in price when electricity goes up, because we need it for everything, you know, and energy costs. Germany, Denmark, and the United Kingdom are all farther along than even Oregon or California on this path to wind and solar everything.
Do you think we're maybe at peak crazy on this and maybe are starting to step away from the abyss, Frank?
I don't think we're quite to I think people are going to have to see their electric rates go even higher before they really start to believe one of those energy lies based on the climate lie, that it's making our electric bills cheaper, that wind and solar are cheaper. No, they're far, far more expensive, even with the government subsidies. And we're buying them from China, adding to our national debt. Germany is deindustrializing now. They're starting to lay off tens of thousands of people. Their government collapsed because the economy is doing poor. They're in a two-year recession. It's going to get worse because their electric rates in those three countries I mentioned are triple our average electric bills. California the nation is double our electric bills and climbing, and people are starting to squawk. So until we get people who are elected to make these decisions, put consumers first over the climate ideology, that doesn't make any sense at all, because on the other part of it, even if CO2 was the problem, China and India are building hundreds of coal plants. Actually, 1,000 total between the two of them right now are under construction.
Yeah, so we're starving ourselves in order for them to build coal plants, right? We starve exactly. Our energy sources, right? We starve ourselves.
And then they can sell us stuff that they make cheaper, sending our money and economic activity to them. And the reason it's cheaper is their labor costs are lower, their environmental protections are almost non-existent, and their fuel costs are a lot lower. Coal is the cheapest form of electricity, and that's why your utilities want to get rid of it, because they get paid on investment. They get paid a capital rate of return. So the more they spend on capital building stuff, that's why they like building wind and solar, the more they're profitable and the higher our electric rates go.
They get paid one way or the other. There's going to be a guaranteed rate of return on that investment. Same for Pacific Power, Pacific Gas and Electric, all of them, right? It's a guaranteed rate that they get.
Exactly. They're monopolies. You can't go get somebody else to give you electricity. And they get paid more the more they spend on capital, the more they spend on all these things. So that they're incentivized to spend them and then spend more money. And then you have the Biden administration paying them to close down reliable coal plants, and they are attacking natural gas plants with carbon capture, which is a crazy idea that's never worked at scale. And the reason that the fossil fuel interests, those companies, the natural gas companies, aren't fighting this, is the dirty secret is when you put carbon capture on, and again, it's never worked anywhere in the world at scale, you're going to burn 25% more of their product.
Ooh.
You're going to use 25% more fuel.
Oh, did not know that, Frank. Frank Lassay, once again, author of Climate and Energy Lies, Expensive, Dangerous, and Destructive. You had brought up the EPA here, Frank. I wanted to shift into this because the Biden administration did put out a story the other day in which they are going to be beating up, I guess, the oil and gas industry on methane emissions here. Could you tell us what's happening with that? And is that going to go away because of the incoming Trump administration?
Well, I think it will. They're going to attack it, and the courts are going to fight with them. And they're using methane and nitrous oxide to attack our food supply as well. So not only are they attacking, the Greens are attacking our energy supply, they're attacking our food supply, driving up the prices there. Methane, they don't like cows. They want us to be vegans. They want us to stop eating meat or lower your meat consumption at least. The United Kingdom just came out and said, you know, their citizens by 2030 need to eat 20% less meat for the climate. So they're out to control virtually and push everything the wrong direction.
Is it just me, or is the climate used as just the Trojan horse to reduce the population?
It's a Trojan. You're absolutely right. It's a Trojan horse aimed at the West and the prosperous nations of the world who are buying into the scam, because it is a scam, folks. It's built on lies. We have no climate problem at all. CO2 is as necessary for life as oxygen. If you were locked in a room with no CO2 and plenty of oxygen, you would die. So it's that important. And plants grow better with 3 to 5 times more CO2 than we have in the atmosphere now. Worldwide crop harvests and yields are up in virtually every crop in every country in the world. The world is far greener because NASA study, it's out there, you can find it still because Google hasn't and NASA haven't removed it yet. 2016, just put in 2016 CO2 fertilizer effect, and you'll see a great study that shows the world is 35% greener over 40 years because of the increase in CO2 That study attributes 70% of that greening to the CO2 content. Methane is an itsy bitsy tiny part of the atmosphere.
Now, to be fair, though, that is a more effective climate or global warmer, isn't it? Is it not? It's more effective at that than, let's say, CO2 for sure, right?
Well, it warms a little bit, but first you have to step back and kind of this is the thing they bypass. There's scientific agreement on water vapor and clouds are the most important drivers of the greenhouse effect, which keeps the world at a toasty 59 degrees. I'd suggest a few degrees warmer than the little ice age that we just came out of since 1850 is a good thing. They call it pre-industrial times. Hard to market. We'll have disaster if it's a few degrees warmer than the little ice age. But, you know, pre-industrial times sounds kind of nice, but life was brutal back then. But methane, yeah, while it's a bit more powerful, it's tiny in the atmosphere. To give you an idea, water vapor, the most important greenhouse gas, is about 20,000 parts per million. CO2 is about 420 parts per million. It's not even 0.5%. It's not even a quarter of a percent. It's ridiculously small, but it's very important. Methane is 1.8 parts per million, 1.8. And it will double in 270 years at the mild rate of increase we have right now. 270 years from now, it'll double.
All right. So we're not in danger of turning into like Jupiter, right? Isn't Jupiter's atmosphere mostly methane and ammonia, things like that? We're not anywhere near that, right?
Not at all. I mean, it's so minuscule, tiny. And the nitrous oxide, which is fertilizer, nitrogen fertilizers made from natural gas and the nitrogen out of the thin air. So if you invent this, it's feeding half of the 8 billion people in the world, they estimate the extra fertilizer is that important. Nitrous oxide is 0.3 parts per million, and it will take 270 years to double to 0.6 parts per million. Water vapor, the most important greenhouse gas, is 50 times more abundant than CO2, 50 times. It's 11,000 times more abundant than methane and 60,000 times more abundant than nitrous oxide.
It sounds to me, ultimately, what you're bringing here, Frank, is that the other climate drivers are way, way beyond everything that the Greens are harping about and changing our energy and food policy over. Okay.
Absolutely. And there's no relationship over millions of years between CO2 and the temperature. Sometimes temperature goes up and CO2 goes down, and sometimes it's reversed. In the short term, through ice cores that they've taken out of Greenland and out of the Antarctica, there is a relationship between CO2 and temperature. But CO2 lags temperature by 600 years. So when it warms up, we get more CO2 because you have more plants, more animals, more life. The world's turning better, and then more CO2 goes up. When the temperatures go down and it gets icier and cold and plants don't grow as well and there's less life on Earth, then the CO2 goes down. They've conveniently hidden that. That's one of those other lies. How can something that follows something lead something?
Well, when it comes to politics, anything can be rigged, okay? Let's look at it that way. Hey, Frank, it's quite interesting then. Do you think, though, that overall, will the Trump administration be able to bring some balance to the insane thumb on the scale of renewables and renewables only over the next few years? What are you thinking about the politics of it all? Because it is politics.
It is politics. And Trump is going to do a lot, and we really need the Republican Congress to act, and it's going to be hard. Not a single Republican member of Congress voted for the Orwellian-named Inflation Reduction Act. It really is an Inflation Increasement Act, where we're going to spend, they told us it was going to cost $369 billion, and it's going to cost trillions. And those trillions are leveraging even trillions more of utility spending, which will be added to our electric rates in the future. Trump can't undo that law, but he can slow walk future payments. He can't stop the payments that have already been contracted to put out there. So he can slow walk those, and by slow walking them, he'll make those projects even more expensive, and without government subsidies, they wouldn't exist at all. But really, they need to repeal the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, completely. And by the way, Kamala Harris provided the tie-breaking vote in the Senate for that, so she voted for that. She owns that. And if Congress doesn't act, by slow walking, it'll make it harder. And also withdrawing subsidies for offshore wind. Offshore wind is five times more expensive than other electric ways to get electricity.
I know. We just temporarily dodged a bullet on that one off the coast of Oregon. I'm sure you read about that.
Oh yeah. And it gets even worse because they want to do floating offshore wind. That's about 15 times more expensive than other forms of electricity. And they aren't good for the environment. Offshore wind harms lobsters and life down there. The magnetic and ambient electricity that comes off of the cables that deliver it, as well as the noise, affects many of the animals and many of the fish don't want to be around that. So that electromagnetic field, it damages the animals and makes them move slower, making them easier to be for predators to eat them. There's a lot of drawbacks to it. In Europe, where they have them, whale deaths are going up. I mean, so, but we don't have to care about any of that because we got to save the climate. We got to save, humanity.
Yeah. Destroy the ocean to save the planet, Okay. Frank, I'll tell you what, I'm going to put your information up on my blog today. And by the way, your website is truthinenergyandclimate.com. And your latest book here is Climate and Energy Lies, Expensive, Dangerous, and Destructive. We'll get all the information up so people can check out a copy of that. We'll have to have you back. Sounds like you've done your homework on that. Any possibility of you going to work in the Trump administration? Maybe you should have taken over the EPA. Boy, that would have been fun to watch.
Yeah, that would have been fun to watch. I don't know. The last time I tried to work in the Trump, got to get to work in the Trump administration. I like what I'm doing now because we need to educate people. And polling tells us that when people hear facts like we're talking about right now, and we really didn't get into the climate part, that it was warmer during the medieval warm period when Vikings settled Greenland, had milk cows, grew barley, and trees grew. Now it's permafrost. Those are facts. When people hear some of those facts, they become far less likely to support all this craziness. That's why Kamala and other Democrats were saying we need to censor people and control this misinformation because, that's because they don't want the facts out there that don't agree with their narrative. And when people learn these facts, they become less likely to support doing these crazy things they're doing that are harming our country and harming all of us.
Frank, a pleasure.
I want our kids and grandkids to have a better life than we have now.
Yeah, instead of walking around in terror, of the climate emergency like our government school teachers have, our South County students, in fear of, there's going to be no hope for you. Yeah, you'll see. And then you'll feel like such a stooge that they were duped by the system. Frank, thanks so much. And once again, the book is Climate and Energy Lies, Expensive, Dangerous, and Destructive. Frank Lassay. He's the author and, of course, big history and politics and everything else. We'll get all your information up. We'll have you back. And thanks for having come on, okay? You be well.
Hey, love to come back.
All right. 735 KMED. Mr. Outdoors will be joining me here in a couple of minutes, too. Special edition of the Outdoor Report. Plenty to talk about there.
We're here with Susan, who had her well drilled by Clouser Drilling. Susan, what made you choose Clouser?
I checked around.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
741, Mr. Outdoors joins me. Greg, have you heard what happened with InfoWars this morning? Did you hear about that?
No.
Yeah. Now
I've been busy looking at weather stuff, looking at road report information because, it is now officially on big time. We had our first
whatever.
Closure on I-5 on Siskiyou Summit yesterday because of winter driving conditions. What happened was the main front went through. We got colder air coming in behind it. Snow levels dropped, and there was a burst of heavy, wet snow on Siskiyou Summit, and that created really slick driving conditions, and they had jackknife trucks up there both directions, so I-5 was totally closed down. I want to say it was probably about an hour and a half. It took them a little longer to get northbound cleared out, but they eventually did, and then everything was fine after that. It just, that one quick burst of that heavy, wet snow, though, was all it took. Well, the ripple effect was they had to close down Highway 66 because all the plows and sanders that would have been working 66 got diverted over to help get I-5 cleared out, the higher priority situation. So 66 was closed I want to say until early this morning, it's looking like, and then they got the plows and sanders working 66, and it is now open again, and no chain requirements there. The only highways we're looking at in the Cascades with chain requirements are highways 138 and 230 near Crater Lake and Diamond Lake, and this is just for vehicles towing or vehicles over 10,000 pounds GVW, but every single highway through the Cascades is reporting winter driving conditions this morning with a combination of packed snow and or slick conditions. And I-5 at Siskiyou Summit also reporting some spots of ice, but they do have the de-icers working. And in the case of I-5, that isn't just the solution that they spray to break up ice, they're salting as well. I-5, one of those locations in Oregon where they do use salt to help get back to bare pavement, it has been effective. They've been doing this now, I want to say, 8 years.
Okay, so we now use salt. Now, is it normal salt or is it calcium chloride?
It's whatever, I forget exactly what the salt is they put on the roads, but I-5 at Siskiyou Summit, the city of Portland, and I'm forgetting the highway over in eastern Oregon. There's only three spots in the state where they're currently using it, and I-5 at Siskiyou Summit is one of them.
Okay, well, I'll keep my old Vanagon off there. I want to keep the rust off it.
Exactly.
Had enough of that. By the way, back to it, because I didn't get a chance to tell you what happened with InfoWars, Alex Jones' old site. All right. The Onion bought it.
Really?
Yes. The Onion, that satirical website, they bought InfoWars, Alex Jones' site. They bought it out of bankruptcy. This reported by the New York Times, so it must be true. I'm being an idiot on that one, I know.
I get what you're going with that.
Yeah, but the satirical news site is going to now turn InfoWars into a parody of itself. So it's going to turn InfoWars into a bigger version of The Onion. It's going to be mocking weird internet personalities who peddle conspiracy theories and health supplements. Well, gosh, in other words, it'll be a parody of MSNBC, maybe? Is that what they're talking about? Probably not. Probably not. I don't know.
But, there's a lot of people out there that think that InfoWars was pretty much a parody anyway. Alex, unfortunately, he brought a lot of everything that happened on himself.
Yeah, I'm still trying to find out, though, where the damage was done to the parents. Especially people who were not named, I still think that was an unjust lawsuit. Although, if I had been advising him, I would have said, Alex, love you, babe, shut up on this, okay?
Yeah.
Let it go, okay? But.
Yeah.
Be that as it may, that's the way it goes.
He reaped the seeds of his own destruction, and that's tough to watch somebody do. But there were a lot of people who were big fans of his, and he had a platform.
I would have much rather he focused on the government agents eating babies and things like that, which he had done in the past. That was much more interesting and probably less likely to be sued over. Just saying.
Right, okay? And the people who weren't fans of him probably considered him like a parody site anyway. So The Onion taking it over in some ways to some people is going to be, well, that's perfect. That's all that site really was anyway.
All right. So there we go. That's what happened with InfoWars. Just understand that, folks. Okay. It's 7:47 outdoor report today here. And like you saw, you already gave us kind of the road outdoor report here. And I was up on Fielder Mountain doing some repairs yesterday, and I got soaked to the skin like I had never been soaked in the skin working in the outdoors, and doing that. I was just a sopping mess when I got home. My shoes were soaked. Everything was.
A lot of that was due. We had some pretty good convective burst of rain come through, and watching it on the radar and the satellite, Josephine County was definitely seeing far more of that than we saw here in the valley floor in Medford. But I'll tell you what, you put that post up, I saw it, I kind of started snickering a little bit and going, note to Bill, get the Gorton's fisherman outfit. It probably will be useful.
That's what I needed. Hey, well, what we're really seeing, though, this is La Nina, right? Isn't this really what we'll be looking at with La Nina? You were talking about that?
This would definitely be far more typical La Nina type conditions. And if we're seeing this already at this point in November, well, then you kind of start wondering what exactly is the rest of the winter going to be holding for us. And, you know, we're trying to get a look at the long range data to try and get a better idea of what might be coming. The one thing that we're definitely starting to see, the La Nina definitely holds along the West Coast, but you know the infamous warm water blob that will appear in various portions of the northern Pacific?
Sure.
It is looking like it's setting up now off the coast of Japan and extending up near Kamchatka. Well, the interesting part of that is that creates a lot of moisture. The way the jets are working and a thing called the Madden-Julian oscillation, which is something that, you know, we definitely watch to see how this might generate weather down the road. The MJO doesn't affect us, you know, in the short term, and short term being anything less than 2 weeks. MJOs typically have an effect on what you're seeing 3, 4, even more weeks down the road. And the way this is starting to set up right now, if this continues to hold, boy, are we looking at a lot of rain, snow, and a higher potential to see colder air outbreaks. And that looks to be the case definitely throughout the remainder of November.
And didn't we have a couple of ski resorts open in Oregon, like earliest time in ages?
Oh, yeah. No, well, not earliest on record. We'll get into that.
No, earlier than it's been in a long time is what I'm saying, you know?
Yeah, it's been a while. No, Mount Bachelor is the only one I know for sure of a date they're making a reference to. Bachelor's opening this Saturday and Sunday. They're going to open on weekends until they get to the day after Thanksgiving, and then they'll start daily operations. When I worked there, the Healy family owned it. Guarantee you, if the Healy family was still running Mount Bachelor, it would be open every single day. It would have been open already. Mm. But they're doing it the way they're doing it. So the Oregonian reported that this would be the earliest opening for Mount Bachelor since 1998.
That's something very different. That is showing a different climate of sorts, and definitely cooler and wetter. I don't know if this is going to be long-term. This could be just that temporary La Nina plus the blob, the Japanese blob, coming after us and everything else. So we'll take that.
And exactly. I think you're hitting a very key point. Right now, we just don't know. Okay, I'm going to give you one, though, right here at home.
Okay.
Crater Lake National Park is now finally reporting what they have for snow on the ground at park headquarters. They, for a while, had been using the graph thing, which it was kind of hard to tell. Well, now we know exactly. Today, they report 35 inches of snow on the ground at the park. 7.5 inches of that came in the last 24 hours. What would be normal for today for accumulated snow on the ground at Crater Lake National Park?
Mm-hmm.
15 inches.
Oh, so it's above normal.
So
okay.
They're at 35 inches, and normal would be 15. That gives you a pretty good idea of what we're seeing in the Cascades, because the Cascades have really been seeing the far better alignment atmospherically to get the heavier snow on it. I'm hearing reports that Mount Bachelor has at its base anywhere from, you know, depending on what part of the lower mountain you're on, anywhere from 35 to 45 inches. But when you reach mid-mountain, I'm hearing they've got 52 inches, and they haven't done a summit report yet. Nobody, I don't think, has been up there and taken a look at that. But that gives you an idea, and that's what I mean. That amount of snow on Mount Bachelor, with the Healy's running it, absolutely.
Yeah. So, Greg, let me ask you then about what about Mount Ashland? Are they taking any snow at this point?
Mount Ashland is definitely getting snow, and even though snow levels were higher for most of this storm that just went through, they were getting snow continuously throughout, and it is exactly the kind of snow you want. It's heavy, it's wet, it's very dense, it packs in. And yesterday, I kept looking at webcams. and I caught their snow cats, their groomers, out on the hill packing snow in on the run. So they're getting ready. They're starting to get their base developed. I mean, obviously, we still expect an opening second weekend of December. That's, you know, what they go for. That's their, what they're looking for. That second Saturday in December is your historic opening date for Mount Ashland and also for Mount Shasta. And Mount Shasta is getting snow, too. I know it was snowing heavily on them yesterday afternoon when I took a look. You could barely see the webcams up top. You could barely see out. It was snowing so hard, and they were getting a pretty good amount of snow down at the base where you could actually see, you know, the bottom of the marmot lift and some of the other things there help give you an idea.
Okay, so far we're looking at a pretty darn good we're looking for a good time for at least a good start here to winter sports and outdoor activities. Now, hey, Greg, I'm running a little short on time here. In just a moment, I wanted to bring you back here because you wanted to weigh in, since this is Conspiracy Theory Thursday, right?
Yep.
And I had L.A. Marzulli on yesterday, who, of course, was talking about the aliens, the UFO situation, the hearing yesterday held on Capitol Hill where they're going full bore on this. He says that we're looking at this from a biblical and demonic point of view. He thinks that's what we're looking at. That was his opinion there. And I'm going to be taking people's calls on that. You had a Bigfoot connection that kind of rang your bell on that. I'll give you a couple of minutes on that in just a minute, okay? Hang on.
Okay.
All right, I want to make sure people get that here, besides the outdoor report. And outdoor and a little bit of Conspiracy Theory Thursday Bigfoot.
This is Brent with Home and Built Deck and Fence. Many customers.
Your Department of Adventure off Byless Road on Airway Drive.
Hi, I'm Amber Rose with Siskiyou Pump Service, and I'm on KMED.
Couple minutes before 8 o'clock, KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG Grants Pass. Mr. Outdoors is back here. So, Greg, you heard L.A. Marzulli, and I think I'm going to leave that open for people if they wanted to comment. Do they think he was a nut or not? But he was certainly impassioned on his take on extraterrestrial and UFO, UAP activity. And he thinks we're in a spiritual battle on something like that. But something he was talking about kind of rang your bells. What's up?
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to validate everything he said, and that's not an attempt in what I'm going to do, but I'm going to say there was a couple things that he said that really struck with me, especially from, you know, my Bigfoot investigation research, and that is when he started talking about Nephilim. Nephilim, which, to catch people up, is the name for the angels that were cast out of heaven along with Satan down here to earth when the battle in heaven was lost. And if you've read the Bible and you read Revelation, that's well documented there. So that's where that springs from, which, again, he's talking about that battle between, you know, the spiritual battle, if you will. So that's what he's getting at there with that. I have heard people speculating that Bigfoot could indeed be Nephilim probably since about 2000, I'm going to say, around 2012, 2013. A friend of mine here in town, who is not a Bigfoot guy, really is not interested in the subject, but did have an encounter with them at a campground outside of Butte Falls. He and his family did. Based on that encounter, he came away with it, and he told me with absolutely no, you know, coaching, whatever. He said, I think these things are Nephilim, because he also happens to be a pastor. He also, you know, he's very much oriented that way. He's not, you know, Bigfooty in any way. So I found that highly interesting when he brought that up.
Interesting.
Then
indeed.
I heard other people referring to it. Well, a lady by the name of Dr. Melba Ketchum had a source that they tested the DNA on it that she said, we are positive this came from a Bigfoot. The results of that DNA study for most people it came, that it was human, but there was something otherworldly, and she got into what she thought that was. And, of course, all the Bigfoot skeptics had a great hoot and laugh over it. The majority of the Bigfoot community also immediately, you know, was like, oh, please, this is ridiculous. This is even crazy for us. I didn't feel that
way, though. I have to tell you, when something is too crazy for the Bigfoot community, all right, that's something. All right.
Yeah. Mm. So I'm sitting there and I'm taking all of this in, but as time has moved forward, I've started to hear more and more people talk about the Nephilim connection in Bigfoot. And there are things that I have observed and heard them do that I'm like, how would just an ape pull that off? Well, just an ape wouldn't. Their ability to make the range of vocalizations that they do and change the pitch and the scale within those vocalizations is pretty mind-blowing, and I've heard that firsthand.
And what about the native tribes? The native tribes have an interesting take on that, too, don't they?
Yeah, and this, something he said yesterday really tripped on that. The native tribes who've been documenting Bigfoot for thousands of years, one of the things they have consistently maintained and described was their ability to slip in and out of this world. I mean, poof, gone, like they're out of here.
That interdimensional talk, and I know that sounds so coast-to-coast AME, but still.
They don't describe it interdimensionally. They say change worlds. They also talk about shape-shifting. So I'm listening to your guest yesterday talking about all this stuff, and even though I never heard it come up directly because I'm on the periphery and I've heard similar things about Bigfoot, that immediately got my attention and go, okay, I may not be able to validate everything he's saying, but believe me, there's a lot of element here in what he's talking about that is bubbling up and has been all over the Bigfoot world, the UFO connection. I have talked to a lot of people who have reported UFO sightings at the time they've had Bigfoot encounters or just shortly before or after. I've never had that happen. I've heard about the orbs in the woods. I've never seen one, but boy, have I talked to a lot of people who have. The only UFO sighting I ever had in my life happened in my front yard 5 years ago on the 4th of July, and my wife standing right next to me, look up in the sky, and there is this silver teardrop-shaped thing racing from the north and got over the Siskiyous so fast we couldn't believe it. It didn't even make a sound. And we look at each other and go, did you just see that too?
Yeah.
And we both described to each other exactly what we saw, and we both saw it. So it's like, okay, we both can't have imagined or hallucinated the same thing.
Huh. Well, thank you for kicking off Conspiracy Theory Thursday open phones now with this, okay?
Oh, hey, happy to do it.
Good job, all right?
Always happy to trigger a great conversation for you.
All right. Hey, Greg, have a great weekend. Enjoy it. We'll catch up with you normal time next Friday, right?
Yep, sounds good. We will be back on schedule next Friday.
All right, we'll see you then. Greg Roberts at RogueWeather.com, the Outdoor Report. And usually we do that every Friday or so. Outdoor Report, sponsored by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority on Airway Drive in Medford. Okay, now keep in mind that the Bigfoot Report is not sponsored by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, although they may like that, but certainly the Outdoor Report is. Okay, KMED, KMED, HD1, quick catch-up on the news, and then we will take your calls on Conspiracy Theory Thursday at 770-5633.
American Rancher Garage, United in Service. American